Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, September 19th, 2015. This is episode 1221. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle. Would you like to get cash for your old iPhone? Gazelle makes it easy. The shipping is free, and the payment is fast. What's your iPhone worth? Find out at gazelle.com. And by the new Epson Workforce printers, powered by PrecisionCore. Workforce is an award-winning line of all-in-one printers for your home office, small to large business, or corporate work groups. Visit Epson.com to find out more. And by the Ring Video Doorbell, with a built-in HD camera and microphone, you can monitor your front door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like being home, even when you're not. Right now, get $10 off the Ring Video Doorbell when you go to ring.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, the internode. I just invented a new name for it. I like it, the internode. Computers, the internodes, smartphones, smartwatches, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888, Ask Leo. Thank you there. Cup of coffee, I'm ready to go. Or is that a nice cup of tea? Nice cup of black tea. Mmm. Ugh. 888-827-5536 is the phone number. Kim Schaffer's answering the phones this morning. You can also reach us via Skype if you're out of the area. The area being North America. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Let's see here. What is the big story of the week? The new iPads are here. It's really interesting. Apple, of course, the week ago had a big announcement about the new iPhones. We're waiting; those will come out a week from today or yesterday. But what I didn't realize, and I was kind of surprised, because a friend of mine posted a picture on Instagram of him with a new iPad. There is a new iPad. And I'm not talking the giant iPad Pro. That's not going to be out till November. This is the iPad Mini 4. So I immediately had to run to the Apple store because I need a complete set of Apple devices of all kinds. And it's nice. Basically, what they did is they took the current iPad Air, which they did not update, the iPad Air 2, and they shrunk it. They shrunk it down into an 8-inch device, and the iPad Mini was born. It really is very similar. I like have twinsies here. It's a Retina display, very nice, by the way. I think it's might be. I don't know if Apple's doing something new, but it might be a better display. Frankly, it really looks good. It's 8 inches, has a fingerprint reader, but more importantly, I think the biggest change from the previous iPad Mini is it's got a faster processor, some considerably faster, 50% faster processor, better graphics, and that puts it in parity with the current iPad, the big brother. Now, the iPad Pro is going to set the whole thing on its heels because then they're going to. You can't keep up. Just face it, you can't keep up. It's going to have a new processor that's faster than all of the above. I only got it because I thought, well, maybe somebody's going to say, well, should I get it? And yeah, it's nice. I like the minis. The minis are a good size for me. I think an 8-inch tablet is actually pretty sweet. It's like a big phone. As phones get bigger, maybe you can make the Honey, I Shrunk the iPad version. I like it. It gets the job done. So if you have questions about that, certainly I can talk about that. Apple's delayed a Watch OS 2.0. What do you think about this? I think this is brave. Apple announced that on Wednesday they would have iOS 9, which did come out, and Watch OS 2.0, a fairly big, hefty update for the Apple Watch. Minutes before, maybe days, I don't know. Shortly before its release, they said, oh, we found a bug. We're not going to release it. We'll let you know. And it's, as far as I know, still not out unless it came out overnight. Did it come out? I think this is good. I don't have a problem with that. In fact, I think that that's the right thing to do, isn't it? If you can't... I have a problem with saying the day you're going to release something, because software always takes longer than you think. And when you say a date, when you say September 15th, we will have new versions of iOS and watchOS, you should be able to say, oops, changed our minds. Or, hey, we really wanted to make it better before we released it. I think that's fine. And I applaud Apple for doing that. And I hope they don't get any heat for doing that. I think that's the right thing to do. They did release iOS 9. Now, iOS 9 had a little bit of an advantage. It's been in public beta for some time. And so lots of people, thousands, millions, I don't know, the Apple doesn't say, but many, many people tried it and reported bugs and stuff. So that presumably put the kibosh on any major bugs. We are hearing, as always, when there's a big operating system upgrade, we're hearing people complain that it didn't work or there's failures, occasional incompatibilities. You might have noticed a lot of software updates as soon as iOS 9 came out, and they continue to come out more updates regularly. But I've upgraded a number of devices without incident, as they say. I'll tell you what, let me do it right now on my iPad Air 2. Haven't done it yet. It's not huge, a little over a gigabyte. And the good news is it takes less space in installation. Apple's done some voodoo, really jujitsu would be the better word, to make it install in small spaces. Apple still sells these ridiculously small 16 gigabyte versions of the iPhone, and usually there's almost no room for operating system upgrades. This time, though, it'll work on a surprisingly large number of devices, even very full devices, because they move stuff around, they delete stuff temporarily, bring it back after the upgrade, things like that. You shouldn't have problems, but it's always a risk when you're upgrading an operating system, whether it's Windows 10, iOS 9, watchOS 2. You should back up before you do it. So if something goes badly, then you can always bring it back. But I think it's a worthwhile upgrade. I know it's a worthwhile upgrade. Some really nice improvements. Apple decided this time with iOS 9, with this upgrade, to fix bugs, to improve performance, to improve battery life, to really focus on polishing rough edges in iOS. And they seem to have done that quite well. I'm hearing reports already that battery life has improved somewhat, that I like the new keyboard, the fact that they have a lowercase keycaps as well as uppercase now. Just playing a little catch-up with the rest of the world, the entire rest of the world in the last decade. Apple's was like a typewriter keyboard where it was always uppercase. I read a blog post by one of Apple's staunch defenders, John Gruber of Daring Fireball, where he said, I don't like the new keyboard. I want it to always be uppercase. And I thought, that's very interesting. There is a switch. If you dig deep enough in the settings, you have to go to accessibility settings where it won't go lowercase, uppercase. So John should be happy. He said, the default should be always uppercase. I don't understand that at all. But this is not a typewriter. This is a digital device that can shift to respond to how you're using it. There's some new features with sliding over. If you have an application open, you can. This is like Windows 8. You can slide over from the right and open another application. You could do split screen. A little strange on the Mini. There's very little space, but you can do it. And there's some cases where you might want to. You know, you have your contact list open while you're trying to enter in a phone number or something. That makes a lot of sense. On a bigger iPad, like the new iPad Pro, which will be out, as I said, in November, that will be really nice. That'll make it much more useful. But if you're wondering, should I update to iOS 9? The general rule of thumb is wait a while. You could even wait a week. See what howls of pain there are. Check the Mac blogs, you know, 9to5 Mac and Mac rumors and Mac World, and see if anybody says anything, you know, what kind of problems people are having. Then you can decide. But you know how Apple people are. Day one, apparently 12% of the iOS users had already upgraded to iOS 9. By now, it's probably half. Amazing. As I sit here upgrading all my iDevices. Amazing. 8888 asks, Leo, picture in picture. That's kind of cool. We have a little picture. I haven't, you know, there's so many new features. Even though they said this is just polishing, there's so many new features. I still haven't seen a lot of them. I've got to play with them. A number of people, my friend Renee Ritchie at iMore.com has made a 20,000-word article about all the new features. David Pogue at Yahoo, tech.yahoo.com has done the same. So there are a few articles you could work through if you want to see them all. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's the phone number. Our website, techguylabs.com. Love to hear from you if you want to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. You can also do that at the website. There's no sign-up, no charge. Just go to techguylabs.com. And what happens as we do the show, James DeRuvo, who's writing right now, will put kind of a sketch, an outline of what we talk about and the links and stuff in there. Then we go in, we post the audio from the show and the video from the show after the show's over. And then Josh Windisch goes in there, adds more material. You go in, I hope, and comment if you've got a, you know, if you say, oh, Leo, I got a better idea. There's a better way or whatever. You can always do that. TechGuyLabs.com. I hope that it will become a valuable resource, not just for you, but for everybody. TechGuyLabs.com. Hello, Kim Sheffer.
Good morning.
She's the phone ranger today. How are you? Did you have a good week?
I did. It was a long week, but I'm glad the weekend's here.
Somebody tweeted me and said, no more free plugs on the Tech Guy Show. I don't want to hear any more made-up questions with free plugs. All right? Consider that an order from the Twitterverse.
You never know what the callers are going to
do that's
once
the problem.
They get on the air.
That's the problem. They say, I have a question. They ask, then they get on and say, oh, and by the way.
Right.
Would you like some cookies? Who should I talk to first?
How about Mike in Canyon Lake? It is. 'Tis the season for new phones. So,
yes, it is. Holy cow, is it the season.
He's got some questions, and it's not about the iPhone, so.
I buy every phone I can lay my hands on so that I can answer these questions.
Awesome.
So here's the payoff right now, the payoff pitch. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Yeah, quick question here. I recently got my invite for the OnePlus 2. The day before, I went and bought the Moto X Pure.
Oh, man. Actually, you're kind of starting to sound like me.
I have my iPhone 6 Plus that I'm calling you from, but I had actually returned the Moto X Pure because the whites were really warm, and it was more of like a tan, so I got a replacement.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right, because I have it too, and the screen I think is quite nice. It's an LCD screen.
Well, it was the Moto X Pure that I returned.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of contemplating now, in your opinion, is the OnePlus 2 a better phone, the Moto X Pure?
Both of them leave me a little cold for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
The Moto X Pure, I love Moto X. I really do. The very first one was my phone of the year 2013. I love how it listens to you. You can talk to it. Although more and more phones are doing that now, including iPhones, the new iPhones. It knows what you're doing, so when you're driving, you can set it so it'll read you text messages. When you're asleep, it doesn't bother you. When you're in a meeting, all of those things are very handy. You can add them with third-party software, but the fact that it's built into the phone really, to me, really works nicely. And the Motorola is a fairly clean version of Android, which I also think is a selling point.
Yep.
But I'm more and more of the opinion that your new phone should have a fingerprint reader. I think for security and convenience, it just can't be beat. And now I'm a little spoiled, and it doesn't. So that's one issue I have with it. The other, it's got a great camera, 21-megapixel camera. It does very well in bright sunlight, but doesn't do well in low light because it is missing another feature that I think is fairly important in cameras these days. You have it on your 6 Plus. It's called optical image stabilization.
Yep.
And I think that makes a big difference, especially when the light is low, because it reduces hand shake. And in low light, that's very important. So I feel like the most, and then the third, and maybe the deal breaker for me was battery life. I really want a phone that'll go all day. Your 6 Plus does.
Yeah, it does.
You get home at night, late, even if it's a late night, you still got, 20-30% left. Moto X doesn't do that. Frankly, neither does the OnePlus 2. The OnePlus 2 has an excellent fingerprint reader, also a very good camera. Can't remember if it has OIS or not. I don't think it does. But where it's falling down is the screen. It's a very washed-out looking screen. And if you're sensitive to the point where you think those are too warm, those whites, you may not like the OnePlus 2 screen. I wish there were some way you could see it before you buy it. In my opinion, yeah. The colors were washed out.
All right, so I really like the pure Android experience on both of them. That's why yep. I like the Android phone. But
the OnePlus 2 is their Oxygen OS, and it's absolutely pure. Here's something in their favor. They've already patched for the stage fright exploit. Moto X has not. Everybody, okay. Pretty much, even Samsung's Note 5 is patched for stage fright, fully patched. The Moto X still has one vulnerability, which I find surprising, but I'm sure they'll push something out. Now, here's the thing you might want to wait for. September 29th, 10 days from now, Google announces if you want pure Android, it's new Nexus phones.
Yeah, I've seen both of those, the Huawei and then the LG. Yeah. And
those are speculation. Google's not said anything, so you understand that's the rumor.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Okay, I'm still stuck. Maybe I wait. Maybe
I'm just going crazy with battery life. I'm really, and I think I may end up with the iPhone 6S Plus as my daily, as they say, daily driver, the phone I use all the time. Because
yeah, the Moto X has a quick charge, so that's kind
of
nice.
Yeah, all of them have now the ability to charge up. The Moto X is the fastest. It's from 0 to 100% in about an hour.
Yeah.
So if you're, yeah, I mean, that's, and for most people, that's a normal scenario. And in fact, even for me, I'm at my office. I can charge. I sit down to dinner. I'll charge. But the issue for me is the days I travel, the days I'm in a plane, or I'm in a foreign city and I'm traveling around a lot and I can't get to a charger, and I want it to last all day. I mean, you can carry a battery with you. People do that. I'm hearing that more. Yeah, well, that's one nice thing about the old Note. You can't do that with a new Note. I'm hearing that more and more people making excuses for poor battery life. Well, you just bring an extra battery with you. I don't find that a very good response. And I have yet to see. The only phone that had great battery life in my whole experience was the OnePlus One, which was easily 20 hours, got through the day, no problem. I don't know why the OnePlus Two does not duplicate that battery life. Maybe I don't know what they did differently, but
yeah, they didn't have NFC in it, and
missing NFC. That's another one. Don't you want to? I mean, if you have a fingerprint reader, why don't you have NFC? They go together. That's for tap to pay.
Yeah, that's what I liked about the Moto X, and then you also have expandable storage, which
that's nice. And I did use that. I put a 128 gig SD card in there. That's very nice. You can't do that with the OnePlus 2.
Well, maybe I'd upgrade my
Success
Plus. I don't know.
If you're listening, what you're hearing is there's no perfect phone. There all fall down in one area or the other. There's some great features on the Moto X. Love it. Love the SD card. Everybody seems to have stopped doing that. In fact, I doubt very much Nexi will, because Google doesn't seem to like SD cards. They will have the new Marshmallow, and supposedly Android 6 has much better battery life, just as iOS 9 supposedly has much better battery life. I mean, I think companies understand this is an issue. But what they do is they put smaller batteries in, or they put bigger screens on it. It just doesn't seem to make it. So I don't know what I'm recommending at this point. Leo LaForte, the tech guy. JC Techie says in the chat room, well, oh, it's no problem. You want better battery life, just turn off, turn off stuff. No. No. If you sell a phone with features, I want to use all the features, and I want it to last. Hey, Scott Wilkinson is here. He is our home theater geek. He joins us each and every week to talk about surround sound, big screens, all that stuff. You'll find him as editor of the AVS Forum and also on his podcast, the Home Theater Geek podcast, which is twit.tv/htg. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I didn't get a chance to say Shana Tova to you.
Ah, Shana Tova to you. Okay. Yes, we're in the middle of the Jewish high holidays. The end is coming up this Wednesday, and I got a big program to put on Tuesday night. So
do you play the shofar for Shana Tova,
yes,
for Rosh Hashanah as well?
Yep, yeah, I sure
Scott,
do.
Scott says I can play anything with wind.
And you're correct.
And apparently the ram's horn is a wind instrument.
Well, we don't really call it a musical instrument because it doesn't actually... I use it to play music, but I'm sacrilegious.
You can't... it's really, you're just supposed to call, make a call to
you're
the
supposed
faithful.
To, yeah, make a... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. You got it. You could do it.
No, I couldn't. So, what's up?
Hey, I first want to direct your attention to avsforum.com, where we have a brand new homepage and entire section where we've basically brought all the editorial content, that is everything I write, everything my colleague Mark Henninger writes, and our Blu-ray movie reviews by Ralph Potts mostly, and organized them into a new, brand new section of AVS Forum. So I encourage everyone to go check it out because I'm really quite proud of it.
This is nice. And by the way, Scott's podcast is also highlighted there. This really looks good. So you're really focusing on the gear.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of people want to know about gear. They want reviews. They want how-tos and stuff like that.
Ooh, I want those Bowers and Wilkins 800 series.
Oh, man. Those are nice.
Ooh.
Yes.
And it's nice because you have a Blu-ray reviewer. And I know your last show actually was with the Blu-ray reviewer from AVS.
Correct.
So it's a good place to go, too, if you want to see which discs are worth getting.
Exactly. And Ralph Potts, the Blu-ray reviewer, maintains a list of his favorite Blu-rays, not necessarily in terms of the quality of the movie or the TV show, because he reviews TV shows as well, but rather the quality of the audio and video.
That's what cracks me up about audio files and video files. They spend tons of money getting a perfect system, and then they buy CDs or records or movies, not based on, the 1812 Overture, what a brilliant piece of music. No, because it's got cannons and bells, and it can test your speakers. Or this Blu-ray, man, that was a terrible movie, but boy, does it look good.
You'd be surprised how many people say exactly that.
And it's often the case, isn't it, that movies... For some reason, more attention's paid to the... I guess because they're blockbusters, right?
Yeah, it's certainly what are called the tentpole movies, the big blockbusters. They pay more attention to the quality of them. And even if they're not very good, very often they look really great and or sound really great.
So that's all that matters. What is his number one Blu-ray? Like, if I were going to buy one Blu-ray just to see how good my system could look.
Well, that depends upon whether you're talking about the video, the audio, or maybe the Atmos soundtrack.
I don't have Atmos.
Well, you don't have Atmos, so okay. To tell you the truth, I haven't gone and looked at that list
lately.
You
know what has, though, which is great, is a list of HDR movies. They're going to be... There are already... this is in the theater.
This is in the theater. I wrote that piece about there are new high dynamic range movies coming out in the theater. Five new ones were announced about a week ago, and I'm really looking forward to them, especially The Martian.
Yeah, the only one that's going to be any good. The Martian.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, The Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials.
No. You survived The Maze. Let's see if you can survive The Scorch. And then, of course, next year, you survived The Scorch, but how are you with the Legion of Doom?
Yeah.
Oh, you did well with that Legion of Doom, but maybe the underground Hades trials will work.
Scorch. I know. Martian is going to be great.
Martians, everybody should go see The Martian because it was a brilliant book.
I've heard it's a brilliant book. I read the book. It was fantastic. And I actually heard some reviews from the Toronto Film Festival where they played it. And the reviewers all went, wow, this is great. They were faithful to the book, which is, to me, really important.
Yeah.
When you have a great book that everybody's read, Ender's Game was another example.
It's a challenge because a book, if you were to film every word, would be 11, 20 hours.
Yeah,
you only get two. So nothing in by definition, no 2-hour movie can be faithful to the book.
Can be completely faithful to the book.
This was a short book.
Yeah, but you can be faithful to the spirit of the book.
Right.
And they say that Matt Damon does a great job as the wisecracking astronaut.
He'll be great.
Mark Watney. He'll be great. And the whole movie will be great. And it's being mastered and shown in high dynamic range, which we've talked about before, which means deeper blacks, brighter brights, and really makes the movie pop off the screen.
Our chat room says your 3D or your Blu-ray reviewer said Mad Max Fury Road.
Fury Road, yep.
Was his,
yep.
His
That's
pick.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's his latest favorite, I think.
Yeah. That actually was a good movie, so.
I didn't see it, actually, but I'll look at it on Blu-ray for sure.
Yeah.
You know, he reviews 3 or 4 movies a week. And I asked him,
and I imagine it's not just watching it beginning to end like I would.
Yeah.
Reviewing it means, you know, you got to look at it with a scope and you got to listen to the sound with your eyes closed and all sorts of stuff.
And you got to go through all the bonus features.
Yeah. Oh, man. That could take more than a week.
That can take hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad he's reviewing those as well. That's nice.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
When am I going to get my new TV, my UHD TV with HDR and all of that?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on there too. Samsung, of course, has TVs that are currently HDR capable. Sony just announced that they're going to do a firmware update to a fairly wide range of 2015 TVs. We knew about 1 or 2, but they announced another 3 or 4 that are going to get this upgrade. So there's that. We know that Vizio is about to come out with the reference series, which will have Dolby Vision high dynamic range. And this brings up kind of a big question mark that I'm still trying to get the answer to, which is if one TV has one type of HDR and another TV has a different type of HDR. Oh, man, are we in for another format war? I hope not.
There's different kinds.
I'm afraid so. And I get emails about it, too. What's going on with this format war? Well, I don't know yet. I'm still researching what's going to happen if one type of TV gets a different type of signal. Is it going to ignore it? Is it going to be able to deal with it? What's going to happen? We just don't know yet. And that's why I recommend, be a little patient. If you need a TV right away, then, okay, maybe you need to buy one. But if you can wait, do. Till next year.
I'm waiting.
Next year it'll be settled.
I'm happily, gladly keeping my wallet in my pocket this year.
Yes.
Of course, next year is only a few months away. Well, you mean next fall.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
Yeah.
All right. I'd say that's probably accurate. We also have Ultra HD Blu-ray coming up.
Of course we do. That's coming soon. That's coming this year.
But
I don't have a TV I can watch it on. Yeah, Apple got a lot of heat for not putting 4K in their new Apple TV. And then Amazon turns around the next week and says, oh, we got it. They put it in theirs. Amazon Fire.
Yep.
Scott Wilkinson, you'll find him at the Home Theater Geeks podcast, twit.tv/HTG. But you know what? It's all at the brand new and really looking good, avsforum.com. Thank you, Scotty.
You betcha.
Oh, one thing I hate about iOS 9. I now have to log in again, and it takes so long when you do an iOS update. Well, I'll do that while Scott regales you with tales.
Regales you with tales.
Tales from the theater.
So, yeah, Beatmaster has a good idea. Maybe I could get somebody on from Criterion to talk about their Criterion collection of Blu-rays. I think that's a great idea. Let's see. Lumpy has a question. My Blu-ray is connected to TV via HDMI and then TV to 5.1 soundbar via optical cable. Am I getting true 5.1 surround sound output? The answer is probably not. It depends on the TV. So, Lumpy, if you could tell me what TV you have, I could do some research. I might not know right off the top of my head. But this is one of the dirty little secrets of home theater. And what you have done is what a lot of people do. They take HDMI from their Blu-ray player. They send it to the TV. Then they take the optical audio output from the TV and send it to their soundbar or their AV receiver or something like that. And they expect that 5.1 coming into the TV should be coming out of the TV's optical cable and onto the soundbar. But it's often not true. Very often, perhaps in the majority of cases, the TV will take a 5.1 in from the HDMI input and downmix it to two channels for the optical out. Why do they do that? I have no idea. I wish I did. But it's really weird. Now, if you have an AV receiver, I wouldn't recommend doing this anyway, because unless it's a really old one, it doesn't have HDMI. But if it does have HDMI, take your Blu-ray player's HDMI out, connect it to the receiver, and then HDMI out from the receiver to the TV. That way you know you're going to get 5.1 or 7.1 or Atmos or whatever, and in the sound system, and then your TV is going to get the HDMI video signal. But if you do it this other way, where you connect first to the TV and then out by optical to a soundbar, say, very likely you will not get 5.1. You'll only get two channel. Now, it depends. Some TVs, a few TVs do it. And I must admit, I haven't done my research on this. And it's actually a good idea for an article to do a survey of TVs and see which ones do two channel out. Tell you the truth, that would be difficult research to do, because a lot of the TV manufacturers, I bet, do not want to reveal it. So there is a problem. So let's see. Lumpy, should I use the left and right audio cable from the Blu-ray to sound? Well, then you'll only get two channels again. So that is not something that you should do. TV is a new 70-inch E-Series from Vizio. A nice TV, no doubt about that. Emily the Strange, nice screen name. My cable set box is stuck at 1080i. Broadcast TV looks horrible. Is this a problem with my TV or the cable box? It's very blurry and blotchy. Ooh, well, that's not good. I would say, most television stations are 1080i. Thank you, Leo, for putting that up. I've only got 25 seconds left.
Yeah, I think ESPN is 720p, at least last time
it
I
is.
Heard
so
that
is
talking.
Fox. Yeah. So is Fox.
They there decided that would be better for action, for sports, right?
Correct, yeah. And it is.
Yeah.
That's actually correct.
Yeah.
But
that's on your cable. That's
the cable box. That's not the TV. Right. Having the TV blurry and blotchy, there's something wrong there.
I got to run. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo if you want to talk high tech. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. We'll talk a little bit about Adblockalypse. That's from the point of view of the Internet, that might be the single most, and it's a minor feature, but the single most important feature of iOS 9. Apple decided to allow people to install ad blockers. Not system-wide, very importantly, because Apple, in fact, puts ads, as do others, in their apps. They can't block those, but just in Safari, the browser. And in order to make that work, you have to download one of several content blocker apps. I use Crystal, but pick one of those. And then you'll see in the settings you can enable it in the Safari settings. And it will block advertising from websites. Very controversial. And I frankly see both sides. On the one hand, ads have gotten egregious. They've really gotten to be where you can barely read the content, especially on mobile. They just take up the whole screen, or they use a lot of bandwidth. There's a security implication as well. Many of these ad units use Flash and other technologies that allow malware into your system. Not a problem on the iPad, but certainly a problem on the desktop. And more people are using ad blockers on the desktop to prevent all of that, to speed up their page loads, to eliminate the potential for malware infections, and to not see ads. Also has a privacy impact, because in many cases these ad blockers, most of the ones on iOS as well, block tracking, so that an advertiser can't notice that you've seen that same ad on various sites. and then by doing so, by deduction, figure out what sites you visit. It's very controversial because it's eliminating a source of revenue for most websites. In most cases, the source of revenue. So when you go to a website, when you read a website and you see all those ads, that's what's paying for that website. If you don't see those ads, they don't make any money. Some say that's like walking into the Apple store and saying, I'll take this iPad. Thank you very much. Others say, and you know, I'm very sympathetic to the argument that, but these ads are really out of control. There are sites where you just, the site is three times larger and takes many, many more seconds to load, like 30, 40 seconds to load. And why should we have to put up with that? I don't know what the answer is. As somebody who's made his living my whole life on advertising, I've never worked on a paid medium. I've always worked on mediums that are free because they're ad-supported, like this show. So on the one hand, I really think blocking ads, and I really understand a website that says, oh, blocking ads, you're going to put us out of business. But I also understand, you know, why it's gotten to this point. The ads have gotten very annoying. There's a precedent for this. It's happened before. Remember when pop-ups and pop-unders were the bane of the web? You'd go to a website and all these windows would open up. Or worse, after people started getting annoyed about that, open under the browser. When you close the browser, there'd the ad be. And in that case, the browser community responded. They put pop-up blockers. There's not a browser out there that doesn't have a pop-up blocker in it. And at that point, nobody complained. Nobody said, oh, but that's how we make our living. They said, yeah, you're right. These things are annoying. And they found another way to do it. The problem is, of course, that people don't really see banner ads. Do you see banner ads on a website? No. We've trained ourselves to kind of look, almost to look away, to read the content and ignore the banner ad. And so they've had to get more aggressive, making those ads jump and dance, take over the page, force you to look at the ad before you can look at the content, lots of things like that, to make them effective. And advertisers track for a variety of reasons. I mean, I think people, I wish we hadn't chosen the word tracking, because that sounds like somebody's like stalking you. But in fact, in most cases, what tracking means is the advertiser's trying to keep track of how many times you've seen that ad so they don't show it again. Isn't that annoying? You don't want to see an ad again and again and again. Well, the only way they know is if they keep an eye on how many times you've seen it. They're also interested in stuff you're interested in. So they may say, hey, you know, this guy goes to a lot of sporting goods websites. Let's put some more sporting goods ads in his stream. And I think you know, that's what you want. You want ads that are relevant to your interests. Then they also, and this is what bothers people, may start to put together a dossier on you. They may start to gather information about you. And if on one of the sites you enter information about yourself in, that information could then be fed to the advertisers by the site, and that dossier gets bigger and bigger. I guess my feeling is that dossier is really not designed to, you know, throw you in jail. This isn't the government. These are advertisers. These are marketers. That dossier is to try to get you to buy products by giving you more germane ads, by putting ads in, you know, that you're more likely to click in on. And I don't think that by itself is you know, that let's call that ad customization, not tracking. How's that feel? And people say, I don't want it. I ain't going to have it. And I think, truthfully, the real problem is people don't like ads. They just don't like ads. Really. Let's face it. That's the bottom line. And ad blockers eliminate them. So it's very tempting. And yet, one of the guys putting out an ad blocker, Marco Arment, he made one called Peace because he wanted just peace and quiet. But Marco has a website with ads on it. And many of his friends and colleagues, like John Gruber of Daring Fireball, use the same kind of content system on their website. These are not obtrusive ads. They're very subtle. They're not annoying. But Peace blocks them. And Marco realized, you know, I can't in good conscience sell an ad blocker because many of my friends rely on these ads to make a living. And ad blockers block them. They'll put them out of business. So he pulled it after 3 days. Lots of controversy over that. I'm gonna defer on this one because I understand both sides very well. I'm on both sides, as I think most people are who are working on the web. Most people who have blogs that are supported by ads also understand that these ads are extremely annoying. It may be this is just an evolutionary thing, that it may be that this is going to force advertisers to find less annoying ways to connect with you. That's my hope. I think along the way, though, we're going to see sites disappear, and that makes me sad. 8888 Ask Leo, what do you think? I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I think there's both points of view have merit. I just don't know what the answer is. I think the answer would be for advertisers to come up with a better way. For instance, the kinds of ads we do, because we're a tech radio show, we know that you like tech stuff. And we try to do the ads for products that you'd be interested in. We don't have to track you to do that. T. Harris is next in San Diego. Hi, T. Harris.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am unfortunately going to have to break for news, but can you just give me
the basics? Yeah, I've listened to you since you took over for Jeff years ago.
Thank you. Yeah, by the way, I'm going to mention Jeff in a bit, but we got to take a break now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Shouldn't have picked you up in the first place. I'm sorry. Yeah, but I'll be back in 6 minutes and 30 seconds. 520 seconds, I'll be back. I'll be back. 511 seconds. But meanwhile, Scott will regale us with more tales from the front.
More tales from the front.
From the front row, I mean.
Okay. Thank you for putting that timer up there. I will try to remember to look at it. So we've been talking in the chat room about this and that, one thing and another. We talked about TVs, the down mix. Turd Ferguson was talking about smart TVs with built-in Bluetooth audio. And I originally thought he meant Bluetooth audio reception. And there might be one or two. I can't think of any off the top of my head. But Bluetooth audio transmitters, that's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that either. But it would be a great thing for wireless headphones. So I'll have to look into that. That's a pretty good question. Jim Four asks, what speakers do I recommend? Just this week, I went down to ELAC, which is a German company that's making a push into the U.S. market. They got Andrew Jones to move from Pioneer over to their company. And he has designed a set of speakers for them that I think are phenomenal. And again, for the money, like he did at Pioneer, these ELAC speakers are tremendous. They sound great. There's a whole range of them, from floor standers to bookshelves to a center channel to subwoofers. And they're a little more expensive than the Pioneers, but still not tremendously expensive. I think the B5s, which are bookshelves, are in the, I think, $250 a pair range, which is, you know, not very much. So that's... Those are great speakers. The other ones I recommend, of course, are the Pioneers that Andrew Jones designed. They're still available. SVS makes some excellent speakers. My colleague on AVS Forum, Mark Henninger, has been reviewing SVS Prime speakers. That is the line below their top of the line, Ultimate speakers. And those are also really good. I think they're a little more expensive than the ELAC, and certainly more than the Pioneers, but they're also really, really great. I had the speaker designer, Smith Freeman, from SVS on my show not too long ago, so you could look that up. Also, Andrew Jones has been on the show a number of times, including the last time talking about these new ELAC speakers. KC8RLU asks, is there a far better choice of remotes to replace any of the Logitech Harmony remotes we've tried? It's frustrating when the remote suddenly freezes or crashes. You know, I have an old Harmony One, a really old Harmony One, and it has never frozen or crashed. And in fact, I've had a number of Harmony remotes and they've never frozen or crashed. So if yours have, I'm sorry to hear that. That's not a good thing, believe me. But they remain my favorite universal remotes, primarily because they are organized around activities. So you push a button that says watch TV or watch Blu-ray or listen to the radio or whatever. And it does all that for you. The other thing I really like about them is that the setup is relatively easy. You have to connect the remote to your computer by USB and then go to a website and tell it what equipment you have and what each activity you have, like watch TV or watch Blu-ray or whatever, watch satellite, watch or play games, and which of your equipment is involved in that. And once you tell it all of that, then it automatically sets up all the what are called macros, that is the strings of commands that turn on each device and set them to the right input and so on and so forth. And if something happens that a device doesn't get a command for some reason, say somebody walked between the remote and the device, you can always just push the help button. And that'll probably just fix it right away because it'll probably go, oh, something didn't get turned on. And it'll go turn it on, and then it'll ask you in the screen, did that fix the problem? And you say yes or no. So KC8RLU said, I had a Harmony Harmony One, and it died. Sorry to hear that. Mine's still going strong. Web7186 loves his SVS subwoofer. They do make great, great subwoofers, no question. On the One, have you heard about Tecton, small internet speaker company, highly rated? I have not heard of Tecton, but since you mention it, I will go check it out. I think that's a great idea. Archandra is asking, do you know of any receivers that have HD radio integrated into their tuners? I can't come up with one off the top of my head, but I'm sure they do. I know I've seen it in specs before, so I know that it exists.
That's why they were called receivers for so long, as they had radio built in.
They had
right?
radio in them. Yeah, exactly.
I think mine still has radio. I don't know if it has HD.
It probably doesn't, but I think if it's older.
This is a question. My Onkyo and my Denon, I have two, one in each room, are maybe 5 years old.
Okay, that's not too old.
When is it time to start? They're not very expensive. When's it time to start looking at a new one?
Well, I think it's time to start looking at a new one when you significantly change your system in some other way.
I'll wait till I get the new TV because then I'll need to get a 4K one and I'll need to get one that does Atmos and all that stuff.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And this is what I was about to say, that when you move to 4K, you must get an AV receiver
right.
that has the copy protection compatibility. It's called HDCP 2.2. Not all receivers have it, and this is going to be a big problem.
Plus support for HDMI 2.
Right, right. Well, if it has HDCP 2.2, it will automatically have HDMI 2.
Right, but I'm sure that my five-year-old does not support that, right?
No. So when UHD Blu-ray comes along or the Amazon Fire TV with 4K.
I'll wait till I get all new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Amazon Fire TV is out now.
True. And, I must admit, I don't know for sure that it has HDCP, that it uses HDCP 2.2. That is an interesting question. I'm sure the streaming providers want to protect their content as much as the Blu-ray player, Blu-ray disc providers. So I would assume, but I have to go verify, that the Fire TV will have HDCP 2.2, the newest level of copy protection. And the trick is, another little dirty little secret, is that the receiver, if you send the signal from the device, the source device, through a receiver, it has to have HDCP 2.2. If it doesn't, the signal will never get to the TV.
Right.
So that's a real critical thing that a lot of people aren't really talking about. Revo says, my Harmony One has a puffy battery and I can't get it out to change it.
That's not good.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it must be a rechargeable one. It is, obviously.
It is. The Harmony One is a rechargeable. Yeah.
And
mine is quite a few years
old
now.
You need to take that in because that's a bad... When a battery expands like that,
Dangerous. That could be dangerous.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, smartwatches, ad blocking. Sure, we'll talk about that. iOS 9, watchOS 2.0, the new iPads, the new iPhones, the new phones in every regard. There's new phones everywhere. I've kind of settled, you know, I figure I'm going to have one Android. This is called a first world problem times two. But it's my job, understand. I'm not boasting. I'm not proud of this. In fact, if it were up to me, I wouldn't have all these phones. But I need to, because I need to, you know, tell you what's good and bad about each. So the thing that's keeping me up late at night is, well, what's the best Android phone out there? And there is no perfect phone, but I'm thinking if I had to pick one, I'm going to say the Galaxy Note 5, because I like the screen, the stylus. Battery life, I wish it were better. Camera's superb, though. Fingerprint reader works. It's got optical image stabilization. It doesn't have SD card slot, but I think I got the 64 gig, and that's probably enough. It certainly seems to hold everything I want to put on it. Just saw a study from an Apple developer about the amount of storage you need. And it turns out, of course, 16 gigabytes, which Apple still sells. I think Apple really wants to be able to say, the new iPhone, it's $650. Starts at $650. Yeah, the one you never in a million years should buy starts at $650 because it only has 16 gigs of storage. And it's just not enough. This app developer, and again, this is just one, I don't even remember what the app was, one particular app. But he noted that of all, that by far, by the way, the number one iPhone model was the 16 gig version. People are cheap. And Apple, see, this is why Apple shouldn't offer this, because Apple's implying that it'll work fine. It will not. Do not do that to yourself. Do not. Go to the next step up. Don't get a 16 gig iPhone. But the vast majority of people with 16 gig iPhones only had a gig or less left. That's nothing. It was full, in other words. People with 64 gig iPhones, the next step up, none of them had come even close to filling them up. 64 is plenty, especially nowadays when we stream music, stream video. We're much less likely to have to store it all. And even if you do store it all, I have a dozen books on my 64 gig phone. I have, 1,000 songs easy. There's plenty of space. So if you're in the market for a new phone, whatever it is, 64 gig, you could probably get away with 32 gigs, but never 16. Never 16. And that's why the lack of an SD card doesn't kill me, because if you get a 64 gig phone, it's not, you don't really need to put another 128 gigs of storage in there. So the Note, I guess, is, best. It's not great battery life, but it's the best of the current bunch. It's not pure Android, but you can get it as, pretty close to by using an alternate launcher and disabling the Samsung and carrier programs on here. Gosh, the screen's good. The camera's great. Probably for most of what you do, this is a good choice. And I'm very excited about it. 1 week from now, I'll have the iPhone 6S. I decided to go with the Plus because, again, battery life, battery life, battery life. And the Plus has remarkable battery life. Plus, nowadays with the big screen, we're kind of liking those big screens, aren't we? Get a lot more done. Old folks like me can see better. It just feels like, why not go for the bigger screen? Optical image stabilization in the camera. The fingerprint reader, spectacular, fast, reliable, and most importantly, secure. That means you can depend on it to keep your stuff safe. I like that. So we'll have more of a review, of course, in the weeks to come. But I suspect if you were to pull me over next week and say, show me your phone, I would have a Note 5 in my left pocket, an iPhone 6S Plus in my right. And then we'll decide from there. Then there can be only one. We'll have to decide from there. We were talking to T. Harris in San Diego. Sorry I had to interrupt you there.
It's fine. It's fine. You've just been wonderful for me over the years.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we had a break for news. So just to recap, you bought a new Dell. Is that right?
Yes, I did. This is my fifth laptop, and I got a bad one. And support made four attempts to fix it through the guys in India. And finally, they said, okay, you have to send it back.
Well, that's good news, because if it's bad, then that's the only way to fix it, probably.
Well, of course, while waiting for the box, I just said, I'd rather not have a Dell. I've never had any problem with the other four laptops.
No, I got to tell you, there's no technology in the world that won't have some percentage of units will have flaws. What the test is not that, but whether the company stands behind them and replaces
it. Right. Well, anyway, I just said, you know, I'd rather not send it back. I just want a refund on it. And by the time I got an answer on that, they said it was too late. And I just wondered if there's some way for me to send this thing back to get outside the system. I've made attempts in every way I can think of.
What do you mean too late? Was it more than 3 months?
No. But the last time we called them, they just said, you're too late. I'm very hard of hearing, and so women, children, and anybody with a heavy accent, I have a very hard time understanding. You've got a great radio voice.
I'm with you on that one. I actually finally broke down and got hearing aids for that reason.
I have mine turned all the way up.
Yeah. Yeah, there comes a point where nothing can help. I understand.
Correct. So I just wanted to send it back. I don't feel comfortable with them.
The clock stops, as Dr. Mom in our chat room says it so eloquently, the minute you said, I want to send it back. And if you can document that you said, I want to send it back, that's the date. Not any subsequent date. That's the date. So,
okay. And
in fact, it would be a scam for them to hear that and say, oh, we'll get back to you, then wait a few weeks till it was outside their window of opportunity and then say, oh, sorry, it's too late. That would be a scam. So that's when you go to the Better Business Bureau and your local consumer affairs folks and you say, I need some help.
Because
if you can say, you can document, you know, I told them on September 3rd that I wanted to send it back and they put me off. That's a scam. That's not right. That's illegal. And at that point, you can go and say, you know, unfortunately, what happens with these reps, you know, they don't want it to happen on their watch.
They get dinged.
I think in many cases, this is why sometimes you get such bad customer service is because it's on their watch and they get dinged for customers that leave, customers that want money back. That hurts them and might even hurt them in the paycheck. This is a very bad thing for companies to do. Dell was famous for years for the world's best tech support. But like every other PC company, when the profit margins got so narrow, they had to cut somewhere. And what they've done is they've outsourced support to these companies in India and China and Canada and all over the world. And it's not the best tech support anymore, and it's a shame. You can get better support. You have to pay for it. In a way, I understand that because
warranties with it, Leo.
Oh, yeah. Then you're golden here. If you bought the warranty, you're golden. You insist. Okay. In fact, next time, ask for the supervisor. Escalate it. Write to Michael Dell, Round Rock, Texas. You know, you may not even need a consumer advocate. You could do this for yourself because you should absolutely get support on this one.
Thank you. I just need a way to charge them. I don't know how to sue them.
Don't sue them. Just go call and talk to a manager. Talk to somebody. Not the guy you were talking to. Because he's trying to save his paycheck, and I don't blame him. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, if you're interested in the new iPhone, I got a solution for you. What to do with the old iPhone? You know what I'm going to talk about. Go to Gazelle. Gazelle, they're giving new life to use smartphones every single day. Fund your new iPhone by selling your old one, getting cash at Gazelle.com, Gazelle.com. They couldn't make it easier. I just love Gazelle. And by the way, they're really an honorable company. We've sold lots of devices to them. And whenever they get a device that they think is worth more than their quote, they will actually give you more money. They have no obligation to do so, but they do because they want you back. That's why there's so many satisfied customers at Gazelle. Just go online. You're going to get 30 days locked in on your offer, which is nice. That gives you plenty of time to get a new iPhone or new phone of any kind, transfer the data over, make sure you like it, and then pull the trigger and say, okay, I want my money, Gazelle. They'll send you a box. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. In fact, as long as you're up to this, why don't you pile all those gadgets into the box? Gazelle even pays cash for broken iPhones. Shipping is free, and for most items, Gazelle will even provide the box. All personal information from the device is removed if you forget to. They have paid out $175 million-plus dollars, over 2 million trade-ins, with an excellent, excellent report card on customer satisfaction. I love Gazelle. You will, too. See how much your phone is worth, just as a little exercise. It's no obligation. There's no cost. Just go to gazelle.com. Say, yeah, I got my old iPhone 6, 16 gigabyte. What's that worth? So I can get the new one. Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Phone number, website, techguylabs.com. Paul is in Ocean. Is it? I know it's not Ocean Slice. Ocean Ice? I think it's a typo. Where are you from, Paul?
Oceanside.
There's a C where the D should be. I got it. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I've got a question for you regarding the iPad. I run a division with 8 technicians. They all have iPads and iPhones, and they need to enter data in the field. I'm looking for an app or software that'll allow me to make a fillable form that can be used on the iPad where the guys can just pick and choose from random choices that are already a part of the
form. Yeah, a custom form.
Yes.
So there used to be we'd recommend FileMaker for this kind of stuff. I wonder if FileMaker still has their iPad. Let me go check. It's a database program that allows you to do custom databases. And then you can have a custom form that you'd fill in on your iPad. And they have the app on the iPad. It's called FileMaker Go. So the advantage of doing it this way is you'd have a database on your desktop that they'd be communicating with. And that's what you want. You want all that stuff in one place. And then they'd use FileMaker Go on their iPhone or their iPad to fill in the data.
Okay, so it's FileMaker Go.
Yeah, but you need the FileMaker desktop app as well. So go to FileMaker.com, and you can actually see the solution. This has been around for ages, and they've done a good job. I'm sure there are others that will do something like this, but boy, FileMaker is kind of the king of the hill on this. The other advantage of using FileMaker is there are third-party FileMaker people who can design this for you if you don't want to take the time to do it.
Oh, yeah, I can find those on, like, Odesk.
Odesk? I'm sorry, say that again?
Never mind. It's a third-party.
There's guys who are customizers.
Okay.
So, I don't know Odesk, but there are guys who are customizers who will then say, oh, yeah, what do you want, custom solution? No problem. We'll do it in FileMaker. FileMaker's excellent. I'm sure there are others' choices, and if people in the chat room or listening want to call and suggest others, that'd be great. What you need, obviously, is a desktop app because you're going to have a database of this stuff the techs fill in. You need some central place to store that. And then with that, you'd like have iPad and iPhone solutions and ideally custom form with your company's name, and they tap buttons and they fill out stuff. That would be great. It's a really powerful program. I haven't used it in years, and I'm glad to see that they've kept it up to date. FileMaker.com. Yeah, I'll give you an idea of how long it's been around. Their current version is FileMaker 14. Wow. Bruce, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bruce.
Yes, coming.
By the way, while Bruce is coming to the phone, somebody pointed out, of course you could use Google Docs, couldn't you? So Google Docs lets you create forms, fillable forms on the web that you could, actually that's a free solution that would be pretty nice. So in fact, you see this a lot. People will give you surveys and so forth using Google Docs. which is free. So you could have the you'd have your text surf to that website on Safari, fill it out, save it, and then you have access to it at the office immediately. That's another good way to go. Google Docs. Thank you. Great solution. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yes. I have old equipment or hardware on my computer. Which
I have old equipment as well.
And it needs Windows 2000 for one of them and XP for another, and I have Windows 7 on. And
holy cow.
Well, it's necessary. And I have a loader on Windows 7 that allows me to go to any of the platforms, and good. I want to know if I upgrade to Windows 10, am I going to be able to have the same loader?
What's the loader?
Well, the loader is when you first boot up, yeah. And it says what do you want to go into.
So you have a multi-boot operating system.
Right.
Got it. And you have a bootloader that will say, oh, well, I see. In fact, Windows does this by, I haven't tried it with 10, but.
That's what worries me. I called Microsoft and they said, well, we don't know.
Somebody will have done this who's listening to the show. Call me or go in the chat room. And the up to, Windows, certainly Windows 7 did this. When you install Windows 7 and it saw XP in 2000, it'd say, oh, I'm not the only Windows. Would you like me to overwrite those, or would you like to have all three of them, and then it'll put a bootloader in?
Right.
There are third-party – it's called a bootloader.
Yes.
There are third-party bootloaders that are out there. I've recommended some in the past. So they sometimes require a little more messing around because Windows – if Windows does it itself, it's going to take care of all of
that. That's my question.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's a great question. Yeah, so PC guy who says he dual boots between 7 and 10, did 10 recognize Windows 7 and give you the option? PC he's in the chat room. PC guy, mm-hmm. Did it give you the option to do a dual boot system, or did you have to do it by hand? If you have to do it by hand, you need a third-party bootloader that will do that. PC guy says, yes, it did. So Windows 10 at least is savvy enough to see Windows 7.
Right, but will it then allow me to go into XP?
Well, I would hope so. So I guess what you need to do is a little experimentation. I think what I would recommend is don't do the Windows upgrade, obviously, because that'll eliminate – the upgrade will eliminate whatever you upgrade. So if you take your Windows 7 installation and take the upgrade offer, there goes Windows 7. Bye-bye. Uh-huh. So what you'll need to do is install it as you have done previous versions of Windows with an installer. They don't do disks anymore. You could put it on a USB key and install it. And see if it says those magic words, I see you have other versions of Windows. Would you like to make a multi-boot system? You will be able to back out. If it doesn't say that, you won't have done any damage yet. If it doesn't work, there are bootloaders that will work with a little more effort, but they'd explain how to do that. EasyBCD is one. That's probably the most up-to-date one. And that will allow you to... It's from Neo Smart Technologies.
So would I be able to do... You said I can't take the free one. I have to...
Yeah, so if you do the upgrade, you know, hey, get Windows 10 free.
Right.
It will wipe out the current version. So that does not set up a dual boot for you.
So that would wipe out all the equipment I have.
Yeah. Yeah, so you don't want to do that. You will want to install Windows 10 much the same way as you installed previous versions of Windows.
Which
from
means purchase Windows 10.
No.
Oh.
That's an interesting question. I don't think so. So I think you can download Windows 10. The ISO is available, the ISO, which is a pre-made disk that you can download from Microsoft's site. It's available.
Mm-hmm.
It's easily, freely downloaded. You can put it on a disk. It will check to see if you have Windows 7, and then what you want to do is make sure that it doesn't overwrite it. That's the tricky thing.
But will the loader then allow me to still – it'll see Windows 7, though.
Because you have 7, and it'll say, oh, you're eligible for a free upgrade.
Yep.
I don't think – that's a really interesting question. I don't think that that requires that you eliminate Windows 7. That's basically the question you're asking.
Well, I'll keep and see if anybody answers
make
that.
Make a backup, and we'll keep an eye on here. And then EasyBCD is a really good solution that allows you to do exactly what you want, which is...
Even if I have Windows 10 on there.
It's Windows 10 and UEFI ready, and that's key because if you have a newer computer, UEFI and the secure boot will be very tricky to deal with, but this will take care of it. It's from NeoSmart, neosmart.net. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You would have to buy a copy. So part of the license agreement is that it is an upgrade. Somebody in the chat room is saying, and this kind of makes sense, that it is an upgrade, which means you cannot use the old version of Windows anymore. Now, the good news is it's not, I mean, I bought a copy of Windows 10. It's not, it's like $129. It's not as expensive as previous versions. That's Johnny Jett.
Oh, it's just changed.
What happened?
It's changing.
I've been everywhere. Johnny Jett, he is our travel guru. He is everywhere. The man never sleeps, never rests. But he does, wherever he is, join us from the road to talk about using technology to travel better. Johnny is in some, it looks like a mall.
Looks like a mall, but look what's right next to me.
Are you in a hotel?
Nope.
There's a giant screen. Are you in an airport? This is an airport.
You got it.
Wow. Is this a nice airport? All right, John.
Take a guess which one.
I don't know. It's a very it's the nicest airport I've ever seen, and with lots of
thank you
nice stuff. Is this Johnny Jett's airport? You have your own airport now?
Well, you'd be surprised to hear that I'm in Los Angeles International Airport.
Wow. I've been there. I was just there last week.
New Tom Bradley terminal.
Nice.
And it's my favorite terminal in America. And actually, I'm here shooting promo videos with LAXisHappening.com.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, because I always talk about how incredible this terminal is, they had me come out and do some of my travel tips. So we're in the middle of them doing it right
now. I'm going to fly to LAX. Now, let me ask you, because last time I was there, are they going to tear down that old remember the restaurant that was there and the
Encounter? No, they're not going to take down the Encounter.
Good,
that's an iconic building.
It is iconic.
What they've been doing is complementing it, which is pretty cool. They added 91 light poles all around the airport. They added the LED light band, you know, over a mile long. That also complements the pylons, the pavilions. When you come out, they change colors. It's really cool at night.
There seems to be a competition. For a long time, airports were like bus stations. People didn't put any money into them. All of a sudden, they're upgrading LaGuardia. They're upgrading airports all over. I think having a nice airport, I think cities are realizing that's important.
It was embarrassing. Honestly, it was embarrassing to land from overseas, sometimes from third world countries, where that airport was so much better than the ones in America. And now finally, you know, airports are starting to spruce up, especially LAX. You know, they're pumping hundreds of million dollars into all the terminals. This one is completed. And
looks good.
This is my favorite.
Is this the international terminal? What terminal?
This is the international terminal. So
if you're coming in from overseas, this is where you'll land.
Exactly. But you're not going to see this if you land, because I just landed here.
You'll go straight to customs.
This is for departures. But it's really cool. They have
that
local stuff,
great,
which I love. They have, Fred Siegel, which you only find in Santa Monica. They have all these local restaurants. And, you know, SFO has done the same. They brought in local restaurants, which makes that airport incredible.
I guess because it is a competitive thing, because LAX, you could also fly to Burbank, you could also fly to Long Beach. There are other airports in the area. Similarly, San Francisco competes with Oakland.
Yeah, the San Francisco can compete, but not the other small.
No, the small airports compete on size, not on amenities.
Right. For sure. So anyway, my website is LAXisHappening.com was one of them. But I have an app, and I do have another website for you. So are you ready for my app?
I'm enjoying the screen behind you, though, by the way. This is whatever it's going on.
I can't get my big head out of the way.
There's different stuff going on all the time. It's really this. But now it's an ad. That's so cool. It's a
beautiful.
And
what's cool about, by the way, I just saw you brought up the airport website. What's cool about it is that these guys actually will tell you where the construction is, where the traffic is, more importantly, so you can stay away. And they encourage travelers to go upstairs if you're dropping people off, or actually for picking people up, or vice versa, which is, you know, some airports don't allow you to do that, but LAX does. So my tip, by the way, is if you're ever traveling through LAX, you know, have them drop you off or pick you up at departures, not arrivals, especially if it's not busy up there, or vice versa.
That's what Silver Car does, which is nice. Yeah.
Yes.
That's something you taught me about, the Silver Car.
Silver Car's great.
Yeah,
I love it. And they're here.
Yeah.
But here's something. Here's a cool app. It's called Blah Blah Car. Have you heard of this one? BLA Car.
No, what is that?
Okay, so this is actually a billion-dollar company. They're huge overseas. You know, they're not here yet in America, but it's great for travelers because I love the whole sharing economy. So what they'll do is they will, if someone's going on a long ride, it's not for city within the city. It's for, let's say you're going from London to Manchester or something. You just type it in. And if someone's doing that route, they'll tell you exactly when they're leaving, what kind of car they have, what kind of driver rating they have, their age. And you can hitch a ride basically for, a very low, very small amount of money.
I've just told them I'm in Germany, and now they're in German, so I don't...
Yeah, so go back to the UK, but...
I should have told them I was in England.
Yeah, they're in England, Poland, Netherlands, Mexico, Hungary, Italy, India, Croatia, France, Spain, Germany, Serbia, Russia. But it's awesome for travelers because, let's say you can't find a bus that's going that direction or a train. You can go on a blah, blah car and see if someone's going the route that you're going. Or if you have a car, you can make some money. Instead of traveling alone, you can get someone to, help you share the gas money or whatever, or keep you company. And the reason why it's called blah, blah car is because it wants to know if you like to talk a lot. You can choose, blah, blah.
I do not want to talk. That's the only reason I wouldn't do this. But you can say, I want shut up and drive.
Yes, exactly.
I want the shut up and drive button.
Exactly.
I bet you like to talk to people you're driving with.
I do. I mean, I know. It's one of the best parts about traveling.
You're very social.
The location.
I like to look at buildings.
My wife looks at me like, why are you speaking to... I speak to everybody, and I always ask them where they're from.
You're smart. I should do that. I'm shy. blablacar.com. This is very cool. Not yet in the U.S., but all over the rest of the world. Very nice.
I love it. I'm sure it's going to be here. They just raised $160 million. They're valued at $1.2
billion. Wow. So
this company's not going away. This is the real deal.
Wow, that's very interesting. The car sharing, the ride sharing, the sharing economy.
And that's what I love about it.
And it beats hitchhiking.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, because at least you can see reviews for the person and stuff, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
You don't just take it a pig and a poke.
No.
Pigs aren't very good drivers, I would.
I'm going to put it down a little bit.
I love this. So you're in the middle of doing a promotional video there, huh?
Correct, for the website. And what I also love about that, they're willing to spend money to help travelers. So I've been sharing all my tips and secrets about LAX, shortcuts and things like that. And that.
Well, that's your home airport, isn't it?
It is. I always tell people it's my favorite airport in America.
I like SFO. It's starting to get better. Terminal 2, they just updated, and it really is pretty nice. But, yeah, LAX, there's something magical about arriving in Los Angeles at LAX.
Well, first of all, the weather is incredible. You rarely have weather delays.
Yeah.
And what I also love about LAX, which people don't really give it credit for, it's a horseshoe. It's so simple to get around.
Yeah. Yeah, there's airports. I'm going to Denver in a few months. You got to take a train to get anywhere. It's so huge that you can't get anywhere. Fortunately, they have nice cowboy music. Here we go.
That is a nice airport. It's a beautiful airport, but it's just out in the middle of nowhere.
It's very far from everywhere, including Denver, and it's huge.
Do not speed, by the way. Do not speed on that airport road.
No.
The cops are notorious for hanging out on that airport road.
I'm getting a silver car because Denver now has a silver car there.
But make sure your foot's not too heavy.
No, light foot. I'm a law-abiding gentleman. LAX is happening.
.com, and I'm leaving this week on a around-the-world trip. So
wait a minute. You just got back? What are you, nuts? You just got back from around-the-world trip.
My job is to travel the world, and so I try and live up to it.
Is there anywhere you haven't been that you really want to go?
There's plenty. Honestly, there's so many.
It's a big world.
Yeah.
Here's where you should go, everybody. JohnnyJet.com. Find out what Johnny Jet's up to. Get his free travel newsletter. And he joins us every week to give us apps and websites and great travel ideas. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Enjoy LAX.
All right. I will.
Bye-bye. Usually the airport's the last place you want to be, but you know what? This looks pretty nice. I love the chairs.
This is the Arne Jacobsen chair. They're Danish. It's what I grew up with.
Yeah. Those are comfy. They have them at SFO at Terminal 2 now, too. Must be a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing.
It's a thing. Is that real ivy on the Fred Sager?
No, that's just a photo. But check out this departure board, if I can find it.
Ooh.
You can't really see it.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Debug is in San Jose. Hi, Debug.
Oh, Leo, good to talk to you.
Is it Debug or Dubug?
Debug. I'm a software engineer, and debugging is my favorite thing to do.
Is it really? Yeah.
It's like solving a puzzle and figuring out, why doesn't it work like I think it should?
So a good coder is a good debugger. I mean, you cannot ignore, because no software is perfect. And,
right.
And it often doesn't do what you think it's going to do, so you have to figure it out. And debugging is the process of kind of stepping through the code, the program, until you see why it does that strange thing.
Yes, exactly.
What language do you code in?
My favorite is straight C, followed by C++.
And do you use Visual Studio? What debugger are you using?
Microsoft has always had the best tools.
Yep.
But I haven't been working in the Microsoft world for a few years. But
Visual Studio is awesome, but it's not much use. I mean, you could code for Android in Visual Studio, but most people don't.
Yeah, it's just easier to go with Android Studio and the standard tools.
What can I do for you, Debug? I love your name.
Well, so anyway, Leo, I've listened to you for years, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Thank you.
And I've written an app that I believe I'm going to piss off the I'm going to tick off the
Are you about to plug something?
I'm going to tick off the Twitterverse, yes.
No, you're going to make me happy if it's something cool. If it's just some dumb thing, I'm not going to be happy. So what do you think?
I think it's really cool.
All right.
I believe in this app, Leo. I've spent a year and a year and a half developing it, and I really believe in this. It's one of the modes that it has safety implications. So I'm going to tell you about that one. Anyway, can I get the name out there?
Please.
Pick Grenade, PICGRENADE, Pick Grenade.
Is it an app?
Available now on Google Play.
All right, I'll go to the Play Store. I'm an Android guy, play.google.com. I'll search for Pick Grenade. Pick Grenade. What is?
Thank you very much.
What does it do?
It's a camera app.
Oh, I like that.
That takes pictures in three of the modes can be used unattended. It will take pictures depending upon what criteria you set.
Does there it is blow things
interval,
up.
There's interval mode where it'll take a picture every so often. There is touch mode, where it'll take a picture when you touch the screen. There's face mode, where it'll take a picture when it detects a face. And motion detection mode.
Ooh.
It'll take a picture when it detects motion.
So you could set up your phone, sit it somewhere, run that program, and then somebody comes in the room, you'd actually see a picture.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, the special thing about it is, one, it can take pictures absolutely silently.
It's a surveillance
camera. No shutter,
camera.
No flash, no sound, no nothing. It can take pictures completely undetected.
All right. Well, it's $2.99, so it's not free. All I can say, I haven't tried it. I'll have to give it a try, and I'll give you a review. How about that? Well, and it's a fairly challenging image. It's a bright green hand grenade for the icon, but I'll give it a try. I thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Andrew in Tennessee. Hello, Andrew.
Hey there, Leo. How's it going today?
It's great. How are you?
Not too bad. Just on my way to my next city to do my next job. So,
are you a hired gun? Have gun, will travel?
Well, not quite. More like here's the next project we're doing. Go there. So, most of my time is on the road.
What do you do? What kind of projects?
Right now, the project we're working on, we're testing 911 for VoLTE service.
Ah, interesting. VoLTE is the voice over LTE that every carrier is starting to use. The quality can be superb.
And people ask me what it's like, and I tell them to think of it as a Skype quality audio call
it
over
is.
A cell network.
When I started getting calls from LTE, VoLTE calls, I was like, what's going on? This sounds too good. What is going on? This sounds weird.
When you first hear it.
Yeah, it's a little weird. So you go around, and of course 911 has to work. E911 by federal law has to work on these right. services, so you go around and test it. That's neat. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a 1M8. Now, the microphone on it has failed. So I now have to use either speaker.
It doesn't make it very good for making phone calls, does it?
No, it doesn't. No. So I either have to use speakerphone or Bluetooth headset, which is what I'm doing right now.
Now, this phone is a couple of years old.
Right.
It was a great phone in its time.
It is. And even now, I still think it's a great phone. It takes amazing pictures, even though it's...
Five megapixels, but they had this... And I loved the Zoe. I loved some of the weird camera features that were built into the HTC One. I'm afraid HTC's not been doing well of late. They're a little sickly. I don't think they're going to go away because they make what many agree is the best virtual reality helmet of all things. And they've teamed up with Steam, which is, of course, the big gaming concern. So they're probably going to just pivot. But I don't know if I'd buy another HTC phone. I don't know how much longer they're in this game. Although, you know, they make one. It's got even a better camera. They went to 20 megapixels.
Right. The M9.
You like Android?
Well, I already have an iPhone for work. I don't want to have two iPhones.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have to say the new iPhones are I'm starting to get a little excited about them.
If I could drop the money on a new iPhone to replace my current 5C for work, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah, you might want to. I mean, there's some new features, and the camera, by the way, in the new iPhone, 12 megapixels is rumored to be stunning, but I'll let you know next week. But if you want an Android phone, I had a little conversation earlier during the show on how challenging it is. There's no perfect Android phone.
Right.
You have to decide what you're willing to give up. Is battery life important?
No, not really, because I'm in the car all the time.
Yeah, so you can charge it.
The car charger. So
I really like the Moto X Pure, the new Moto X. But I have to say my current top-of-the-line Android phone, and by the way, it's as expensive as a new iPhone, is the Note 5. If you want to save money, then I would get the Moto X. That's $400.
And that's what I was thinking. But does that Moto X Pure have NFC? And I'm really starting to get into HDR photography.
It does both. It does both, okay, yes. Cool. Yeah, cool. I got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec so I can continue off the air. Yeah, it does have NFC, which works great. The design is beautiful. There's no more beautiful phone. I got the Ebony back, and I love it.
Okay.
I kind of was unhappy about battery life, mostly.
Yeah, and I heard you talk about that earlier.
Camera's great. No OIS. You know, I really want fingerprint in every phone I buy now.
And does the Pure have that?
Nope.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, neither does your 5C, right?
Oh, no, the 5C doesn't, nor does my M8.
So you won't miss it.
Right.
Just when you once you get it, you won't want to go back. It's more like that. And there's actually a compelling security argument for it because if it's well implemented, and I believe it is well implemented on the Android phone, certainly on the iPhone, it really does secure your content so that nobody can get into it. And I'll give you my number one reason I want to. Well, there's two. One is for Android Pay or Apple Pay.
Yeah. And I use Android Pay.
Okay, then you really
once in a while for like just on vending machines.
Yeah, it's really nice to have that secured because you got a credit card in there. It's also good for LastPass. I use LastPass, and LastPass will allow me to authenticate with a fingerprint. So it's very fast and easy. It doesn't require any password entry or PIN entry, and it is fully secured. So there's something to be said for that as well. But that's not an issue for you yet. The next phone probably.
That's something else I was just starting to look at, password managers. And one I'm really looking into is LastPass, because I know you've talked about
LastPass. And if you have a fingerprint reader, You know, I would. Well, you'll see, price is an issue, though, right? You don't want to spend $1,000 on a phone.
Right, right.
Yeah, this you know, this Note 5 that I have is $850. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I'm not a big Samsung fan either.
Yeah, I'm not. I hate Samsung with a passion.
I had an S3, and that was amazing. I used S4s for my
Voltage.
I had
the S3 was the last good phone. This Note 5 is as good. I really they've understood that people don't want TouchWiz. They've really the S Voice. I just disable it. I don't use it. But you know what? I think you'd like the Moto X. You sound like a pure Android guy. There are features in the Moto X that are great. You drive around a lot. It knows you're driving. It's really good. In a lot of respects, it's a great phone. Sure looks good.
Okay. Now, you can get it on Amazon, I'm assuming.
No, get it from Moto Maker. You don't want it on Amazon because Moto Maker lets you customize it. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk high-tech computers, the internet, smartphones, smartwatches. Boy, a smartphone mania today, isn't it? 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside the country, use Skype. Yeah, just Skype in. It's free. Website is techguylabs.com. When I talk about stuff or I answer a question, we always put all that information there. If you have a comment, no need to yell at the radio. You can add your thoughts right there in the comment section. That's what it's there for. No sign up, no fee. Just free and open, like the web is supposed to be. TechGuyLabs.com. J5 in the chat room made a very important point. And I appreciate that, J5, sharing a sad story about a friend of his who passed away. And nobody could get to open his smartphone up to get the information about next of kin, emergency services. It was locked, right? Not a reason not to lock your phone, folks. Lock your phones. Please, do me a favor. I know it's a pain. There are easy ways to unlock them. That's why I love a fingerprint reader. That's painless and fast and effective. But you're right. This is an issue. And that's why there's a standard called ICE. ICE, in case of emergency. And it is a great idea to look for an ICE program for your phone or to find there are ways on almost every smartphone to have the lock screen have information about next of kin, allergies. Imagine you've been injured, you can't talk, your smartphone's there in your pocket. The first thing the ambulances, the EMTs, the emergency medical technicians will do is they'll go for your phone and they hope you have the ICE information on that front there. Set it up. That way they can at least reach your next of kin. They can see if you have any allergies to medication. Very important. ICE. You can actually find out more about it. Emergencystandard.org. Talks about the apps and so forth that you can put on your iPhone or your Android phone that will help emergency technicians, police officers. And they also have ideas about where to put this information as well. 6 places emergency personnel are trained to look in your glove compartment, your wallet or purse, on a bicycle or a motorcycle, under the seat. If you bicycle a lot, you might want to put that emergency information on a card under your seat. In the home, believe it or not, look in the refrigerator, dairy, or butter dish. So if you have a butter compartment in your refrigerator, they are trained to look there. So put some information there. And, of course, if you have a smartphone, they also look there, and that's a great idea to have some ICE information on your lock screen. It's a great thing to keep in mind. And thank you, J5, for sharing that sad story, but I'm glad you did because it gave us the opportunity and maybe we'll save some lives by putting that information out. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Jordan's in Hawaii. Aloha, Jordan.
Hello.
Hey, welcome. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I actually need help with my website, but I don't want to advertise it.
Good. We're trying to put the kibosh on the free plugs. I have to admit, it's gotten out of hand the last few weeks. So thank you for respecting that. I appreciate it.
Well, so I basically opened the domain just mainly for the email. or about to demand for the email?
Yeah, I recommend that. In fact, people say, oh, I don't want to change. I've had Juno.com for years. I don't have to tell everybody. Well, the next time you set up an email address, get a domain name, get your family name or whatever, and then you can easily and usually inexpensively, almost always free, forward mail from that domain name to Gmail or Yahoo Mail or whatever you want to use. And if you change your server, no big deal. Your email will not change. It's like having a permanent email address. So good on you.
Yeah. Well, I have questions probably for another call in the future regarding that too. But because I have the domain, I figured if people see it in my email address, they're going to try to browse to it. And I wanted to at least have a placeholder there or something there.
I wouldn't worry too much. I mean, you can, certainly. I wouldn't worry too much about it. But if you want to do it, I think it's a great idea. So there's a couple of ways you could do it. You can create a cover page for the internet.
Well, can I let you know what I got set up right now?
Yeah, sure.
Because I've been playing with IIS and Windows IIS.
Wait a minute. You're not going to set up a web server in your closet, are you?
Actually, I have it on a virtual machine on my desktop.
Okay. You're more of a geek than I gave you credit for. You know, this is a great thing if you want to learn how web servers work and all that. I don't generally recommend it.
I mean, that's more my goal with learning experience.
That's fine.
But at the same time, if I can put up an HTML with links to all my business stuff.
Just remember that when you're running a server inside your personal network, you're inviting people from the outside world into your home.
Yeah, that was my concern.
Yeah.
I didn't know how well isolated it.
Yeah. So it's really important. You know, I mean, this is part of the learning process.
I don't want to advertise on your radio.
Yeah, you don't want people going there. That's the other thing is you don't have as much bandwidth as a web serving company does. In fact, what's your upstream bandwidth on your internet?
I think I just upgraded to 20 gigabytes.
Down. First of all,
it was 100 down, 20 up.
20 megabits up. All right. So means a couple, you know, that means a number of people at the same time can come see your site. You know, when you buy a website, most hosting companies, it starts at 100 megabits to a gigabit upstream.
This is like over here, it's like the third from the top tier.
Yeah, but that's fine. But just remember,
it's not.
Just remember that, you know, you can't have, but you don't care. You know, it's just onesie, twosie.
I don't intend on directing people to it. It's
in case they type in your URL.
And I figure if it ends up crashing my network, then, hey, business is booming enough that I can afford
it's worth it.
Piece.
Yeah. So that's fine. Just make sure you isolate that machine. The best way to do that is
virtual machine, because I'm using Hyper-V.
That's not the problem. It's not the machine. It's the people coming into your network, right?
Yeah.
So you've now given them a door they can go through. It's port 80. Yeah. They can come in into your network.
Yeah, port 80, obviously.
So you have to make sure that the server, it doesn't have any vulnerabilities that they could then take advantage of and then get into the rest of your network with. You got to be really careful.
After I did that, I moved the rest of my network within a second router.
Yes.
And then I kept that server because...
That's what I was going to suggest. You have two routers.
I can never figure out how to get the IIS working on within Windows itself, the client version.
Yeah, so you're supposed to run Windows Server, I think. But anyway, that's neither...
My brother gave me a license.
You're doing it the hard way, but you wanted to learn how to do that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But you also have to be a security guru. Anybody running a website... it's incumbent upon them to secure it, not just for you, but for the rest of the world. So, but it's, you know, you're absolutely isolating from the rest of your network by having two routers. Stuff cannot go upstream and then back into your network. So I think you're all right there. Make sure that you run as secure a setup as you can in that local machine running IIS. And I think that's fine. You're not publishing the address. It's not like hackers are going to seek you out. Although, the way they work, they just go through IP addresses, you know, with automated tools looking for vulnerabilities. For normal people, there are a number of places that will create an internet cover page for you. About.me is one, for instance. You can then have that, since you've already modified your domain name system, your DNS, for your address, you can modify it a little bit further to forward any requests to that address to your about.me page. That way people will get a single cover page with information about you if they ever should say, hey, that's his email address. I wonder if he's got a website. It's a good idea, actually. Everybody should have a website, at least a cover page. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think I have an about.me. I should check. I think I set it up many moons ago. Yes! There I am with my dog. This was just to mess with it. So the idea was it's about.me/Leo Laporte. And then you put in there links to, you know, your Twitter and your Twitter, your Facebook, your, you know, all of your different stuff. So people can find that. It's like a little resume. I did not do this seriously because I never refer to anybody. Refer anybody to it, but that's an example. Hey, did I mention that this show is brought to you by the best printers in the world? Epson! I don't know. You know that. Epson! Especially these new EcoTank printers. Man, I just love what Epson's up to. We talk a little bit about the Workforce printer. You can find out more if you go to Epson.com and click the link on the new Precision Core. This is a technology that came to Epson's been using in their industrial printers for a long time. This almost seems impossible. 40 million dots per second with Precision Core. And by the way, each dot is a different size. They're talking nanoliter, so that you have exactly the right amount of ink to get perfect printing, high quality. When I print with my Precision Core Epson Workforce Pro, it prints like, there's a page. It's like a page a second. It's amazing. Print shop quality, too. Vibrant colors, clear, crisp text. The high-resolution Epson print chips are one of the fastest inkjet printing technologies in the world. Take a look at the all-in-one Epson Workforce Pro, and look, too, at their new EcoTank. It comes in the box with 2 years of ink. That's about 50 cartridges worth. So there's Workforce Pros with EcoTanks as well. Just really sweet. Unlike laser printers, there's no warm-up time. You can print on a wide range of media. They're very energy efficient to get the job done. Workforce printers, they make mobile device printing easy, too. I have it set up so it works with Google Print and AirPrint. And then work group connectivity in a business is great. We have one at work and one at home. Epson and the new Workforce printers. Find out what they can do for you and your business. Epson, Epson. .com. Epson built to perform. Yeah, there's one dedicated to all the geeks in the audience today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Taking your calls, talking high tech. Christy is next, Valencia, California. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Leo. Okay, so I recently exchanged my old Note 2 for a Note 5.
You didn't stick the pen in wrong, did you?
No.
You can. Don't. It breaks
it.
You can't. I found that out. I have a Note 5 as well. You can actually put the pen in upside down, and if you do, you'll snag the sensor that tells whether the pen has been removed or not.
Really?
Yes, okay. So don't do that. Don't even be tempted, because I thought, oh, no problem. I'm not going to stick it all the way in. I'll just stick it in a little way, and it got stuck. And I had
interesting.
To.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I haven't been paying attention to how I've been putting that pin back.
Yes.
In,
but start paying attention.
Okay. I will.
And if you get it stuck, go online. There's techniques for getting it out carefully, because you'll be tempted just to withdraw. It doesn't take much effort, but then it snaps a little tiny plastic widget. And, you know, the only thing you lose is that feature that lets you pop the pen out and write on the blank screen, which I like.
Oh, well.
Can't do that anymore.
That's not much to lose.
So, no. It's not the end of the world. So what is it? Do you like your Note 5?
I love it, except it's not the Note 5 that's complicating my life. It's AT&T.
Oh, welcome to the club.
Yeah, no, I love my Note 5. But when I bought it, there was a promotion going on where you can get a free tablet with a new phone. So I went for it thinking that it would be nice.
Oh, don't ever fall for those. Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to have something in my office.
Free.
On.
free.
Yeah, free except for $10 a month.
Some charges may apply. Yeah.
So, I got it home and Netflix wasn't working on it. Everything else will stream just fine. YouTube, podcast.
What kind of tablet did they foist upon you?
The Tab 4.
Oh, it's a Galaxy. Okay.
Yeah.
So that should work.
And I don't know anything about tablets. I mean, I've always been a Mac baby, and I thought I'd get a...
Yeah, it ain't an iPad, but you know what? For watching Netflix in your office... Great.
Oh, yeah, I know. It was like sort of a no-brainer, and I don't have to drag my laptop all over the place.
Yeah. So it does everything else fine, but Netflix, what happens when you try to use Netflix?
Netflix will open for between 1 and, at the very most, 60 seconds. Oh. But usually it goes for about 2 to 4 seconds, and then it just quits.
Yeah, and it's just a broken install.
Okay, listen. So then I tried it on my new phone, and it won't work on my new phone either.
What the? Let me just see here.
There's a lot of stuff going on here. I've been on the phone with Netflix and Samsung support, and I have done everything they told me to do. I wiped everything back. I've restarted. I've uninstalled. I've reinstalled. I've cleared the cache. I've cleared the data, all that stuff. I called AT&T, and on their end, my connection looks fine. So everybody is blaming everybody else.
Of course, and that's the
somewhere else. I don't know what to do with this.
That's what we do in technology, because it's such an interdependent thing, right? You know, everybody. There is always somebody else to blame. I'm watching Narcos, the new Netflix original about the Medellin cartel. In Colombia, I'm watching it right now on Netflix on my Galaxy Note 5. And,
really?
Yes, and I'm just—I mean, okay. If you keep talking, I'll be able to see the whole show. Just
well, then maybe you can just talk. So
there's the DEA agent.
Another mystery is that I took the tablet back into the AT&T store because I thought it was—you know—I just took it back.
And let me guess, it worked there fine.
Fine.
Yeah. So we've narrowed it down to you because it's working for me and it worked in the store. So it's something about your connection that is a little strange. I can't quite figure it out. Maybe it's your Wi-Fi. Are you using Wi-Fi for it? Obviously you are, right?
Yes, I'm using Wi-Fi for it. But when I turn the Wi-Fi off, it works over cellular.
Well, now we've narrowed it down.
Yeah,
in fact, it ain't the phone and it ain't the tablet. It's your router.
It's definitely, but I've restarted.
Can you watch Netflix on your computer using Wi-Fi?
Yes. Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah, it works fine on all my Macs. Now, we bought a booster, a Wi-Fi booster a little while back. Could that have something to do with it?
Something's a mystery here because we've pinpointed that it is not the tablet or the phone because they work fine in other in other contexts.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, it's got to be your internet connection, and it's got to be something going on with the Wi-Fi. I'm not sure what, but for some reason it's dropping Netflix. Who's your internet service provider?
AT&T.
Oh, well, at least you got it from the same people.
Yeah, I know.
You have U-verse.
We're kind of stuck where we are.
You have U-verse.
Yeah.
Could be a U-verse problem. I would certainly... Now, the router that you're using, the Wi-Fi router, is that from AT&T or did you buy your own?
Yeah, it's from AT&T.
Well, here's the good news. No more buck passing. It's AT&T's fault.
Right.
First thing, I would take out that booster... Just take it off and go stand next to the U-verse router and see if it works. If it doesn't, if the same thing's happening, it's AT&T, and it's something they've done with the router. And I hate to say it, but remember, AT&T is in the television business, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. They would rather you watch their expensive premium channels than you use these $7.99 streaming video services.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, but I'm just saying... Why won't that work? I'm looking here. I'm looking on, you know, I've been watching this whole time. I've been watching Narcos while talking to you. Fascinating show. But it's not crashing on me. So.
I went on to some chat or onto some forums, and I saw a whole lot of people with Netflix and Samsung problems.
No, it's not Samsung.
These really complicated.
No, we know it's not Samsung.
Yeah, no.
Because it works fine on your cellular connection. It works fine at the AT&T store. It is your router. There may be security settings on there. It may be the router for some reason is knocking it off. And it may be a weird interaction because what's happening is it's crashing the software. You know, it's not
instead of Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, did you, I presume by now you've uninstalled and reinstalled the software.
Oh, 100 times.
100 times. Yeah, no, I think it's AT&T, and I think they need to fix this because you can tell them, look, it works on the cellular. It works at your store. Yeah. The only place it's not working on the phone and it's not working on the tablet, and it is working on your computer, you said? By Wi-Fi?
Mm-hmm.
That's really weird. You know what? I am going to have to. Have you streamed video from other sites like YouTube? Does that work?
Well, YouTube works fine.
Yeah.
Streams everything else.
We got to take a break. I have to think about this. Hang on for a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We have a solution from England. They do. But it'll tell you there's somebody else is watching Netflix from another TV. It won't let you. Somebody's saying, you're not running Netflix somewhere else too, are you? Because there is a limit to the number. But you're not.
No.
Mm-mm. Boy, this is a very interesting, really interesting question. So, we got the brain trust working on this one. I love it. And what we've seemed to have come up with is for some reason Netflix is not liking on the Galaxy Note tab and the Galaxy Note 5. The Netflix app, the Android Netflix app, is not liking the data it's getting from her AT&T UVerse router. And it's not liking it to the point that it actually crashes the program, which is, that's really not liking it. That's not just a ew. That's a, I'm getting out of here. And I'm thinking, and this is what Dreamscapes in the chat room thinks too, and maybe this is a good idea. It's a question of changing, believe it or not, the DNS settings in her AT&T router. That's a complicated thing to do. If you're a geek, you use your browser on your desktop computer. You browse to the router. You go to the DNS settings. And I recommend using the settings that come from OpenDNS. But you can also use Google has some public DNS servers. Verizon has public DNS servers. There are lots of them out there. If you really want to get geeky, there's actually, my friend Steve Gibson makes a DNS server benchmark that you could run and find the one that's fastest in your neighborhood. I feel like this might fix the problem, but it's a challenge. It really is a challenge, and difficult to fix over the radio. But we have, she did the right thing. And this is the key to troubleshooting, is narrow it down, eliminate possibilities. She took the tablet to the AT&T store. Netflix worked fine. She'd put the tablet or the phone on the LTE network, the cell network, not the Wi-Fi network. It worked fine. That's a light bulb goes on at that point, right? It must be my internet access. It's coming through AT&T. And that's the thing that you need to fix. It's some sort of weird, unpredictable interaction between the router and Netflix. That's strange. We'll keep looking for answers. And by the way, if you've got a good suggestion, you can also do that on the webpage, techguylabs.com. Post in the comments there. What do you think? How could she fix this? Next call, Lewis in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Leo. Hey, Leo, I've got a problem. I have a 7-year-old laptop. It's a Gateway. It's going belly up.
Okay.
And I use it for my... Chase internet.
That's all you do with it is bank with it.
Right, and want to replace it. So I had a smart idea that I would go with hot swappable
rack that I was going to put in a PC that I built, and started getting an error message on my recycle bin. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just go with a new laptop.
Yeah.
I saw that. well, the what's
so
the,
you? I'm trying to understand this. You replaced the hard drive in the laptop, and now you're getting error messages.
Well, it's a hot swap. So I bought another SSD and put the new SSD in the hot swappable.
That's replacing the hard drive, right?
Right, and installed a new. Of course, I have other hard drives in the desktop, and the recycle bin that's getting corrupt is a RAD Zero configuration.
Okay, here, can I make just a simple $200 suggestion? Just go out and get a cheap Chromebook.
And Chromebook, okay.
Yeah, because it's all you're doing is banking.
Dedicated so that.
Yeah, you want to. I understand what you're doing, which is brilliant. Have a dedicated computer that is never used for anything else, so there's no malware on it, and you just do banking on it. A lot of people would say use Linux. Chromebook, perfect solution. They're cheap. They are, in fact, running Linux with the Chrome OS on top of it. The only capability it has is the browser, the Chrome browser. That's perfect for banking. It's all you need. It's cheap enough that you could dedicate it to banking, and it's highly secure. I have never heard of a problem of any exploit of any kind on a Chromebook. Those things are rock solid. And you're going to love this. It's got this feature called Power Wash. Should you ever get concerned, oh my gosh, maybe this isn't right, you power wash it, goes right back to the beginning. Every change has been eliminated, and you're good to go again. You're secure. This becomes your dedicated banking computer. I think this is the easiest way to do this. And you could actually get rid of the laptop now. Sarah, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sarah.
Oh, hi.
How are you? Sorry to keep you waiting.
Yeah, it's a long time.
I know. I know. It stinks. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. We're having a problem with some Bitcoin.
I'm sorry. Did you send me an email?
Yes.
I've been meaning to answer that. Okay. Well, now I'll answer it on the air, which is even better.
Cool.
Because I like to do my answers so everybody can hear them.
Yay, let's do that, because this has been frustrating me for weeks. I have been reading as much as I can, watching demos online, and whatever I can find, it just seems like a huge mystery that's yet to be
uncovered. All right, I'll explain it. I think I can explain it. It's not easy, but I think I can explain it. So Bitcoin is an alternate currency, right? It's a different kind of money.
Right.
It's very different. But if the person you're doing business with accepts it, there's no reason why you can't use it as money. In fact, if you think about it, if you've got a dollar bill, there's no intrinsic value in a dollar bill. It's a piece of paper. Almost all money is what we call fiat currency. The value of it is based on faith. Now, it's a little different when it's backed by the U.S. government. Bitcoin's not backed by anybody. It's not a governmental currency. It's what we call a cryptocurrency. And the reason it's called a cryptocurrency is because it's all done with math, which is a little strange. The guy who set it up is a mystery man, and it may be many people, maybe a group, not just one person, named Satoshi Nakamoto. We don't know if he's Japanese, if it's a pseudonym, if it's a group. We don't know. No one knows. But one thing we know for sure, whoever set this up was a brilliant mathematician and, I think, brilliant currency theorist. He understood money. And the way it's set up is very clever. When you use Bitcoin, you will download some software called a Bitcoin wallet. And they have Bitcoin wallets for every computer. I take it you've already done that.
Yeah, well, it was extremely hard to find a Bitcoin wallet that was...
Well, you have to trust it, right?
There's so many, and everyone tells you that they're not secure. On the very application or whatever it is before you even download it, they're going to tell you it's not secure.
Well, because they don't want to be responsible if you lose money. And that's one problem with Bitcoin. If somebody steals your money,
There's no recourse. You've lost it.
It's gone. Yeah, and also, too, whatever device you have your Bitcoin wallet on, say it's on your phone, and you have money in your Bitcoin wallet that's on your phone. You lose your phone, you just lost your whole wallet.
Not true.
And money with it.
Because you are a good, smart computer user who backs up. You can back up your wallet.
Well, that's good to know.
So hang on, because I want to talk more about this. I love this subject, but we do have to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Did you see at the beginning of the show? It was so weird. My Ring doorbell went off. Dong, dong, dong. And I answered it, and it was our neighbor Bob. And I had a conversation with him. Did you see that? Wild. I love our Ring video doorbell. I got to show you. I have it here somewhere. Well, not the one I have installed. This replaces your doorbell, even if you don't have a wired doorbell. If you have a battery-powered doorbell, this will work too. But we had a wired one, so I took the old one off, two wires sticking out of the wall. They give you everything you need, the drill bits, the screwdriver. There's even a level in here, so you can make it install it, you know, level and all that. And then you get the doorbell in here. And so this replaces that button on the front of your door. But it's a lot more than the button on your front of your door. First of all, And by the way, if you have chimes in the house, rings those chimes just as normal. But it also connects to your Wi-Fi. It has a microphone, a speaker, and a camera in it. And now when anybody walks up to your door and rings your doorbell, wherever you are, your phone, your laptop, whatever, will ring. That's how I did it. It went ding, ding, ding. I said, oh, there's somebody at the door. Let me answer it. And I could talk to him. It also has a motion detector. So if somebody comes to your door to look around, you can see. In fact, if I show you my Ring app, let me pull this up here. If I show you my Ring app, you'll see here's the accepted call I had, but here was motion at my front door. So let's see if neighbor Bob was snooping around. Oh, before he rang the doorbell, he's kind of taking a look at the house, huh? He's kind of seeing, he's checking the place out. So this is great because, first of all, burglars almost always, daytime burglars, it's 95% of all burglaries. They almost always will ring the doorbell first just to make sure you're not home. You're not home, but they don't have to know that. Bob didn't know. I could say, yeah, I'm washing the kids. What can I do for you? And they'll go away. Let's see who else is at my doorbell. Oh, yeah. There's Michael and his dad. His dad's dropping off Michael. You can hear the audio. This is so cool. So for security, for convenience, your doorbell will ring wherever you are. I love Ring. Now, we've got a deal for you, $10 off if you go to ring.com/techguy. You can install it yourself in a half an hour. I am not a handyman. It was easy for me to install. It is. There's also a battery in here, lithium-ion battery that'll last a year. So it has a USB port. So you can charge it up and just glue it on the wall, and it'll still work. You could put it on any. You could put a doorbell on your bedroom door. And it would ring your. You can have multiple doorbells in your app. So actually, that's a good idea. I'm gonna put this on our bedroom door. Ring. I love these things. Ring.com. This is like so cool. It works so well. Richard Branson, Virgin, just put $28 million into Ring, led an investment of $28 million. You know how he found out about it? Somebody was visiting him at his Necker Island retreat, and their phone goes, dung, dung, dung. And Branson says, what's that? He says, oh, it's my doorbell. It's ringing. And he talks to the guy, and Branson goes, what? I want to know more about this company. And ends up investing in it. That is a great story. Ring.com/techguy. $10 off for Tech Guy viewers. You got to have this thing. It is awesome. Well, I know the show's almost over, but the best part's yet to come. Dick DiBartolo, our Gizwiz, coming up in a moment. I'm talking right now with Sarah about Bitcoin. So Bitcoin, you store, is digital currency. There's no paper. There's no coins. It's stored in a wallet, a piece of software. You will, with the wallet, create a unique identifier that's just yours, yours alone. If you can use that number, that identifier as a long number, or you can get a QR code, you know, one of those barcodes generated. You could put that on a web page
and people could scan it with their phone, send you Bitcoin. You can send other Bitcoin to other people if you know their Bitcoin identifier. You can even create many identifiers, and it all ends up in your wallet. Now, the main thing to understand is that wallet is the only place that money exists, so you got to back it up. But you can. It's easy to back it up. In fact, if you use Carbonite or some other backup solution, just make sure you back up your Bitcoin wallet. And then you can install it on another computer. You can have it running on multiple computers. If you want to get the value out of it, like if you want to, that means you want to convert it into some other currency, like dollars. You need to find a Bitcoin exchange that will buy your Bitcoins from you. The amount of money they'll pay swings wildly. At one point, it was over $1,000 per Bitcoin. It's a little bit less now, a few hundred bucks. But and that's one risk with Bitcoin. If you ever want to convert it into a national currency like the U.S. dollar, you don't know what it's going to convert at. That's unpredictable. It's like buying stock in the stock market. You don't know what it's going to end up at. So the key thing to understand is you create a Bitcoin wallet. You store your Bitcoin in the wallet. You say, how do I get some Bitcoin? You have to have somebody give it to you, just like dollars. How do I get dollars? You work for it. You have to get somebody to either give it to you, you have to earn it. You can, now, sometimes people are confused by this. It is possible to generate Bitcoins. They call it Bitcoin mining. But the people who set this up were so smart. They said, as there's more Bitcoins in circulation, it's going to be harder and harder to mine it. And so at this point, it's so difficult to mine it successfully. You need to have dedicated, specialized computers, a lot of horsepower, and even then, it's just chance whether you're going to make any coins. I don't recommend it. If you'd gotten in early, perhaps, but at this point, Bitcoin mining is a specialization. You can search it on the internet that requires so much money, and that's the plan. They didn't want anybody to make a lot of money on this. So it costs very close to the same amount of money in energy and hardware as you could conceivably reap from Bitcoin. It's not a viable way to make money. Best think of it as currency, just like dollars, that you can exchange with somebody as long as they understand what it is. What's Bitcoin? If they don't know, there's no point. There's lots to do to read about Bitcoin. I wouldn't go crazy about investing in Bitcoin. It's a pretty speculative thing. But there, in a nutshell, is the story of Bitcoin. It's fascinating. It's not the only one. I mean, it's like Disney bucks. It's like Canadian Tire money. It's a made-up currency that's not backed up by a government, but in fact can be used to pay people if you can find people that'll accept it. There's a cupcake company in San Francisco that'll take Bitcoin. There are, in some places, not in the U.S., but in some countries, Bitcoin ATMs. You could feed money into it and get Bitcoin out. It's not a physical coin. It's a digital thing. But if you think about it, most of our money nowadays is digital, right? Are there actually dollar bills in that bank representing your savings and checking? No. It's all a number. It's all on a computer somewhere. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz. Hi, Dickie D.
And owner of a 2-bit coin.
You have 2 bitcoins?
Yeah. I have 25 cents in my pocket.
No, that's 2 bits. Very big difference.
Oh, it is? Oh,
for that, you can get a shave and a haircut.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I have 7 bitcoins. I don't know what I'm going to do with them.
Wow.
At one point, they were worth quite a bit of money. But the thing is, it's a little shady. Like Mt. Gox, the place that you used to go to get your bitcoins, that guy got arrested for chicanery.
No, I think I'm just going to keep it in regular money. Makes me a little nervous.
Yeah. Let's see.
And what do you do with those Twit dollars that Fred Reek sends every month for salary?
That's another thing. Anything you want, Dick.
Oh, okay.
If you can find somebody who'll take them.
Excellent.
There's Coinbase. Excellent. This is probably, right now they're giving you $232.88. So I have about $1,500 worth of Bitcoin.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you got for us this week?
Okay, from the Outdoor Products Show in Salt Lake City last month, Night Eyes. Do you know the company Night Eyes?
Boy, that sounds familiar. I'm thinking it's an LED company or something.
Yes, exactly. And years ago, we both had Night Eyes Inca pens.
Yes. Didn't you have GizWiz pens and a GizWiz hat and stuff with the Night Eyes in there? Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Because you were afraid of the dark and you didn't want to want. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, Panther Vision was the hat.
Right.
And Night Eyes was the pens. Anyway, Night Eyes introduced. Actually, I gave you one at the meetup, but there were so many people there, you probably didn't even
register. You gave me two, and I have them both.
Okay, yeah. They introduced that at the Outdoor Product Show, and it's called Power Key Minis. And they're mini, tiny little charging cables. They make an Apple version, and they make the micro USB for most of the Android phones. And they make millions of things that hang on keychains. So both of these can hang on a keychain.
I have one right now on my keychain. Because it's nice, to, you know, you never know when you're going to need a charger cord.
Exactly. Now, that's not on Amazon yet. So when they get on Amazon, they usually are discounted. Something that is on Amazon and is being discounted is a different version of the Inca pen. It's called the Inca Mobile Pen. And what's neat about that is one end is a pen, and they're space pens. They can write upside down in freezing weather, underwater. But the other end is a stylus, so you can use it for your tablet or your smartphone.
I need a replacement because my GizWiz pen fell apart.
Oh, okay. Well, these are carbon fiber.
It's really handy to have a pen, believe it or not, on your keychain. You just never
know what
you
need. Sometimes I'm sitting on a bus or a train, and I say, oh, this would be great for Matt. And I go, well, I don't have a... Not since... my Inca pen lasted 3.5 years before I put a refill in it.
Now we're going to have to get you to get a pad, because you really... It's not okay to keep writing on the back of the bus seat.
Yeah, I know, because I tried to find that bus again.
I had a great idea. What bus was that?
So anyway, Inca pen list is $12, but on Amazon, a couple people are already selling for $7.
So get the discounted one if you can find it for all of this Inca or Night Eyes stuff. Yeah, because it's $25 for the lightning cable. That's because Apple takes their tax.
Exactly. And only $14.99 for the Android version. And that's the suggested retail.
Yeah. So $10 goes to Apple, I would guess.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. Nice work if you can get it. Dick DiBartolo's at gizwiz.biz. That's his website where you could see this product and all the gadgets he mentions on not only on this show, but ABC's World News Now and all the shows he appears on. I know you just did a World News Now bit. Play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed Mad magazine by identifying this mysterious object. I think it's a thumb sharpener, but I could be wrong.
That's a good guess. Painful, but a very good guess.
And if you want to watch the GizWiz podcast, it is the greatest show on earth. Just go to gizwiz.tv. And we'll talk again next week, Dickie D.
Yes, sir.
And as for all of you, well, I'm sorry to say it is time for me to run. Thank you very much, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. Nathan Staten, our musical director. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. Thanks to you. I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.